welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folt. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Joining us from Mercenary Musings World Headquarters in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folt. And Mickey, let's begin right where we left off last time out. It's a case of I told you so. I predicted that your St. Louis Blues would win the Stanley Cup, defeating the Boston Bruins in seven games. And guess what happened? They won it. Standout goaltending, great series, wasn't it?
Well, for my team, it was, and it was good enough that I spent 3 weeks in Missouri, a lot of that in St. Louis, celebrating the first Stanley Cup in the franchise history, a long wait, 51 years.
Mm-hmm. And while you were celebrating the Blues win, Toronto was absolutely going bonkers, defeating Golden State to win the NBA championship for the first time north of the border. So, hey, we're both champions. It was a good time. Good sports year.
It certainly has been.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about the topic of today, and that is you wanted to mention and focus on rare earth elements. Not sure where you want to begin on this one, Mickey, but boy, oh boy, this is a timely topic, isn't it, because of U.S.-China trade tensions, the near monopoly that China has in supply of rare earths.
Well, it certainly is, and rare earths have come around. You know, there's that saying, what goes around comes around. We had that tremendous boom from 2009 to 2012, and it busted, and it took, 7 years to come back around, but it has, and rare earth prices are soaring at the moment. And the market has really changed in this 7 years or so. I can't remember the last time we talked about rare earths, but it's probably been 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 years. But
right.
It's time to talk about them again.
Okay. In what way do you think the market has changed in that time period, Mickey?
Well, a number of things. In 2010, China supplied 97% of the rare earth elements in the world. Mm-hmm. And they put on trade tariffs and they made quotas and they artificially manipulated the market and prices soared. And the Canadian and Australian juniors came in willy-nilly. And then the Chinese cratered the prices. Well, their attempts to maintain control of this market are failing. And I think there are lessons learned, hopefully, but not by the Chinese, because they've done this with some other stuff, too, and it's failed on them, for instance, lithium. But right now, they've gone to 71% of the world's production last year, so they still control a significant part, but that is changing.
Right.
It's going lower.
Okay. You mentioned the year 2010. That was also the year, wasn't it, that China cut off rare earth exports to Japan. There was a territorial dispute that broke out there. So, certainly signals that China's willing to use its control of the market, even though it is diminishing greatly, as you said. It's willing to use that control to try to get things its own way. Whether it will with the trade dispute, I don't know.
Well, I would say that's the modus operandi. Not only willing, they'll do whatever they can, but I would say that they're failing in this regard. Since 2010, we have new mines in Australia and Myanmar and Burundi, and we have production coming also from Brazil and Russia and India and Vietnam and the U.S. Molycorp, which went bankrupt, has gone private, is now supplying a significant amount of light rare earths, mainly to the market. Unfortunately, where China still controls the market is the downstream side of it. So they are completely a mine-to-market supply chain, and the downstream separation and magnet-making or final products are still controlled by China, but slowly but surely that's going to change.
Should the United States be taking these threats from China seriously?
Well, yeah, I think we should take all these threats from China seriously because they operate under a command economy. And it does not matter if things are economic or not. But and the U.S. government has taken it seriously. U.S. Department of Defense has been stockpiling specific rare earths, mainly neodymium, praseodymium, which are used mainly in magnets. And through specific policies trying to encourage downstream capabilities, Linus Corp, which is the largest, by far the largest producer outside of China, has announced plans to build a separation plant along with some private equity in Texas. So, yeah, we're taking this very seriously. I mentioned previously the Moly Corp successor called MP Materials. They are lobbying now. Right now, they have to send their concentrates to China to be processed, but they're lobbying big time. I think the U.S. Is going to do something to help them process or separate in the U.S. So, lots of things going on in the market right now.
Right.
And I'm encouraged by what is going on. If you would have asked me, say at the end of the boom and the 2013 bust, if we were going to be better off 5 or 6 years later, and I probably would have been very negative on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm encouraged right now. The other thing we're doing is when prices go up willy-nilly and are very unstable, I mean, they're unstable right now. Mm-hmm. Well, it encourages substitution and replacement. Now, yeah. You will lose some efficiency. It may cost you a bit more. Things may not work quite as well, but that's what high prices do. High prices are always the cure for high prices and vice versa.
Yeah, and we're talking about real. There's also the development of new technologies, which really have the potential, do they not, to reduce overall demand?
Well, not only that, but there's new technologies. Well, let me go and answer that. Yeah, we don't use rare earth phosphors anymore. So the big demand for terbium, which are green phosphors, that's all been replaced by LEDs now. Mm-hmm. So the market's changing very quickly. And not only that, but there are new technologies coming on the separation end of it. And that's where the real hope would lie, is this old style sequential separation using solvent extraction and batteries of 300 centrifuges to separate elements. You know, I saw that when I was at Silmet, the rare earth separation plant in Estonia. 300 cameras, they call them, to separate neodymium and praseodymium from the muck that is the entire 17-element suite of rare earth elements. Cerium, lanthanum, 200 cameras to separate that. So that's changing very rapidly.
You mentioned, Mickey, the national defense stockpile that the U.S. has. How stocked up is it?
Well, I think it's stocked up for some elements and not so much for others. It's always a floating target. Things are being bought and sold all the time, but we're in a lot better shape now than we were 6 or 7 years ago. And the other thing that I think is very encouraging, you know, the U.S. Has in mine tails has all the rare earths it needs for hundreds of years. And those tailings are from heavy mineral sands in the Gulf Coast of U.S., specifically in Virginia and Georgia, and phosphate mining tails in Florida. Because you know, there's only three minerals that can be easily separated for their rare earths, and that's bastnaesite, which is what occurs at Mountain Pass, ex-Moly Corp. Monazite, which incurs and constitutes about 65% of heavy mineral sands tails, and something, another element, another phosphate called xenotime, which is pretty rare. Mm-hmm. But in heavy mineral sands tails and in phosphate mining tails, which are waste products, some of them buried, but some of them on the surface, we could easily extract the monazite, which can, as I said, can comprise up to 65% of these tails. And the process to crack monazite, to get the rare earths out of it, is a process that was developed from 1900 to 1910. So these are proven processes. The problem with monazite, it contains thorium. It has low it's a low level, very low level radioactive product. And unfortunately, U.S. government is sequestered all that stuff. So at some point, that's going to change.
Okay, we've talked about this before, Mickey. They're called rare earth elements, but they're not rare at all. In fact, they're quite common. But what is rare is finding enough in a confined area to make a mining operation economical. Do we really need any more mining operations now, right now, for rare earth elements?
I would submit not. You know, in North America right now, we've got Molycorp. We have the monazite supplies sitting readily available. You know, there are juniors that are working on new separation technologies with private companies. So we have what we need. It's just a matter of getting plants built, separation done, markets developed, and as we all know, the markets are readily available, specifically with the U.S. Department of Defense.
Okay,
and electric vehicles, which mainly run on motors that are powered by rare earth magnets.
Right, and with this rare earth threat from China still hanging over the trade issue with the United States, maybe perhaps end it with a big picture comment from you, Mickey, a prediction. How do you think these talks are going to end? Do you think an eventual agreement, a trade agreement, will be worked out between China and the United States?
I think it depends a lot on who caves first or who caves the most on the question of Huawei, which is the 5G technology that the U.S. is taking the tack that it's a national security event. I think that's the real issue right now, Rob.
Okay. Well, nice way to wrap it up, Mickey. We'll reconnect at the end of the month.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. You can also hear Mickey's latest opinion on kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.